Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Bit out of the China, man. With the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the boy, Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Man.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfuckers.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Ball.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Reddy Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is the show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records revealing in each other, rappers that come and look in and put on. We needed a platform to fight the mainstream. This is the show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow up witness.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering graphics, and download the songs. Check out the archive and hundreds of shows. Plenty of content for you to get through. Everything free to download the stream. Oh yeah, we preserve the real for you.
What's that for? We be, we bought our beats, we represent. All them killers on the mic and we show love to all your fans. Motherfuckers wanna hate, do your thing, you keep the focus. Bringing nothing but the real, so come and tune into the dopest.
I'm a madman, going crazy, knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's UGS for life, dog. Hip-hop ain't dead, representing for them legends. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hip. Two pocket beats, streaming, thank you for the bliss. It's the Murder Master.
Yes, sir. This is Sinister from Hip Hop Corner, Murder Law Magazine.
Yep.
Yeah, it's Delinquent Habits. It's a place to be. Yes. Can you tell us how it was to grow up in the 80s in LA?
Oh. 80s in LA when there was still gang banging. It was crazy back then.
The 80s in Los Angeles? We were kids.
Yeah, we were
coming
young.
Up, kind of looking around and just kind of seeing the world develop in Los Angeles.
Yep.
But I do know that in the 80s is when we started getting the infiltration of hip-hop. At least I remember hip-hop coming in. I know that you were definitely, you know, into hip-hop a lot. I got a lot of East Coast hip-hop coming in.
Yep.
I think we all did at first. And then there was a discovery of that West Coast that started to happen, you know, with like Ice-T and but there was always like, I guess what would you call that, like Africa Bambaataa.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like a Nucleus.
And Soul Sonic. Soul Sonic Force.
That was big too. That was already happening in the '80s. I remember house parties.
My first hip hop song that I heard that like made me from the East Coast that I heard on like a normal radio station was Beastie Boys. Hold it now, we go. Hit it. And when I heard that, I was like, oh shit.
What station was that?
That was Mighty 690 or something.
Shit,
way back in the day.
So that was an AM station.
Yeah, it was an AM station. It was like not even...
It wasn't really even a hip-hop station.
No.
But did you ever think, like, did you ever realize, you know, when you were hearing hip-hop, that you thought, at least I did, that someone in the future the same, like you thought it was, that everybody knew it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That everybody was knowing these songs?
Yeah, I thought, if you don't even know... Some people didn't even know what hip-hop music was in the 80s still.
But I didn't really know that people didn't.
Yeah.
I thought everybody was kind of knowing about, you know...
And the breakdance. Remember Breakin', and then there was Beat Street, like one of the OG Breakin' movies, and Graffiti as well, and hip-hop, and then there was the Breakin' series, of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Wow. I mean, hip-hop in the 80s, life in the 80s, it was all fast, changing, very, very diverse. Not like now. Mm-hmm. Now when the radio has something, every other radio station plays it too, across the world and the country, you know. Normally back then, you know, you could have a hip-hop station that's playing one thing and then another hip-hop station playing that totally another format.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays everybody does the same thing so they don't make mistakes or, you know, why aren't you doing what they're doing? You know, it's nobody's original anymore.
Yeah, of course.
Big change.
Yeah. You had like I said, Jay, Working Crew, CIA with HQ, KD.
Oh yeah, way back.
Surgings.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the first Latino hip hop, it was Latin Aliens. I think Latin Aliens or Metal Man Ace.
Actually, Jellybean Benitez started way back before that in New York.
Oh yeah.
He was one of the first. I learned myself. Yeah. I didn't even know it myself. And Jellybean Benitez is I think he was the first Latino on a hip hop record. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a lot too. He wrote for Fab Five Fred. He wrote for a lot of cats. He was pretty influential. But West Coast, for sure, Mellow Man, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, all that
for us,
all
nice. Is
pretty big. Yeah. As far as like sparking up a huge hit, you know, and a commercial hit.
Oh yeah,
you know,
Mentirosa
Ace,
was a
and Kid Frost. Kid like Frost. Those two.
Yeah, Kid Frost was even bigger with his. Yeah,
pretty big. You know, they got a lot of rotation on radio and a big hit.
Johnny Z also.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Z too. Yeah. Yeah. Except that guy's an asshole. Fuck Johnny Z.
Okay.
I got in a fist fight with that motherfucker.
He's been boxing. You know what I mean? Sometimes people get boxed on.
Yeah, some people get boxed.
Tell us about your first album, Daily Common Habits, and your collaboration of it with Shendog.
Oh, okay.
How it was?
I mean, our first album. That's when we was just youngsters, man. We was hitting the game, and we were going a mile a minute, huh, dog? Just. We grabbed the bull by the horns and went, and Sendog guided us through it, you know. He helped us a lot. Without him, it would have been really hard for us, you know. And he gave us our start, kind of showed us the ropes, introduced us to the right people.
I was talking about, like, how we got with Sendog and what it was like working with him.
Yeah, and the first album itself, like, how'd you feel, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think, in the beginning, it was interesting how he didn't rush to say let's do this, like you know, we knew him for a good while, and then we had also known each other and we were working, and we never were the type of group that was like, hey, we need your help, we need you to do this. So we never did that. And Sendog,
a lot of guys ride dicks, we don't ride dicks, you know what I mean? Like we wanted to make it because he liked our stuff.
Yeah. And then Sendog was cool about it. Like, he just stayed in the background, kind of just letting us do our thing. And when the time was right, he approached us and he said, hey, let me shop your shit. Let me take it somewhere and get you guys a deal. And we were like, cool, let's do it. And it was a very he was instrumental, of course, in getting us all our record deals.
Yep.
all the ones that actually landed. And at the same time, you know, he let us, you know, be who we were, and we feel good about how we grew as a group, and we were able to get good enough to get his attention. And then when he saw that we were ready to be introduced to some record labels, he did that. You know, he introduced us to the record companies, he got us our start, and he played a big role in guiding, like I've said, like just guiding every step after that. Mm-hmm. Even when we went through the ups and downs of losing deals, he got us other deals.
Mm-hmm. Took money out of his own pocket to make sure we were cool. I mean, this is a homeboy, that's a homie.
Yeah.
Somebody that gives you money from their own pocket. That means they believe in your project, they believe in you, and they care. That's cool.
Mm. Yeah. And who has the idea for the mariachi, the Mexican music? It was a DJ or it was you?
Really? I mean, it came from
Tres Del Encontes.
Yeah, there was a time where, you know, we always had these elements and components within the group that were already there. And then there was a time in the 90s where the Latino kind of style was emerging even more, and people were kind of seasoning music more with it.
Yeah.
We had some good friends of the group that were they had their ear to, you know, what was hot or whatever, and they made a suggestion. They were like, hey, you guys should plug in a little bit more of, you know, the Latin shit and your cultural shit and throw a little bit more in there. And you know, OG Style, you know, worked on that, and he started to develop, you know, the production went a little bit more in that direction, and we started to kind of, you know, bring out more estilo, you know, of where we were from anyways, you know what I mean? So we did what we were always doing, we just kind of turned it up a little bit more, and it made for a real nice balance, you know, it really brought it out. But we were really cool about always keeping we kept it hip-hop first. It was always from hip-hop foundation.
Yep.
And I think there's something to be said about that, because I think there was other attempts to do something similar that went way overboard and kind of lost the hip-hop element, you know?
Completely.
So yeah, it really came from, you know, friends, family, it came from within the group. I think a lot of people had a part on how that evolved, but me and Ives and you know, doing what we do, we did a really, I think a really pretty good job of kind of, I guess,
being ourselves, what you're
saying, tailoring it to, you know, distinguishing ourselves to make Delinquent Habits be and sound like we do.
Stand out, you know?
Yeah. Can you tell us about the song Lower East Side?
It's about where we live, yeah, you know? There's the East Side, Long Beach is the East Side, and we're a little bit lower on the map than them, more closer to Orange County. Mm-hmm. And that's where it came from, Lower East Side, just our neighborhood, it's where, you know, Spanglish, and you have every different race in one block. You know?
Yeah. On the another fix, you have an interesting sample. It was Paul Nebo. It was a sample as a soul. Can you tell us about this? This music, OG style made it?
Yeah, he made it. He liked to steal things.
I mean, look at the sample. You know what I mean? He was good.
Paul Nebo was a soul.
He's a good beat maker.
So the production on the first four albums, I believe, the first four albums,
or at least the first four or five or six albums.
Yeah. OG Style produced those, and he was he's an excellent producer. He went really deep, and he got some really cool, interesting sounds, and I mean, you can't really take away from the dude's production. It's really good stuff.
If his personality if his personality matches production, he'd be the best guy on earth. But unfortunately, his production skills are way better than his people skills.
So we don't always know all that, like that sample in particular, I didn't know.
We didn't even know.
The sample was.
You know more than us about that stuff.
But it's a fun song, and one of these days we're going to do it live. I don't know if we've ever even done that live since like 96 or 98.
Mm-mm.
It's almost like a house of rising drum.
Maybe tonight.
Yeah. Can you tell us on Here Comes the Horns of This Is L.A., the song This Is L.A.?
That's another one. OG came at us with a beat.
Yeah.
And it had the Tupac sample in it. And then we had a homie say it over. And then we just wrote a song and did a video. And, you know, it's a creative process. Sometimes it's a very deep spark and it gets a big flame. And sometimes it's just something that's obvious and you just take it and run with it.
Yeah.
I think that's what that happened, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the line that Tupac said in the song, you know, it wouldn't be LA without Mexicans. I think a lot of Chicanos and stuff kind of took that with like pride, like, you know, there's somebody from another race would be like acknowledging, like, you know what, there's a lot of Latinos, a lot of Mexicanos here, and it wouldn't quite be the same, right? I mean, LA is multi-layered with so many, like he said, and all different races in one block. Dude, sometimes
had,
you know?
And that video had Big Jim in it, dude, and Barkley, both of them are dead now.
So it was one of those things that you know, obviously that song was, it could have been almost like an anthem, you know, could have been. For some people could take it like that, but, you know, throughout the albums, we found moments to represent Latino as well, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, we always wanted to do it in a way to be careful to not overdo it, right? Mm-hmm. So if we wanted to give a shout or to draw attention, especially them, when Latin hip-hop, and even today, really, unbalanced, like radio didn't always really support music like ours. We didn't sound like what radio was playing.
No.
So sometimes it was.
They still don't support music like ours.
So sometimes it felt like a battle of just trying to get radio support or mainstream support. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes the lines that we would drop here and there, you know, if I would write a line, sometimes it, you know, it was kind of to throw like a little jab back to say, you know, we're right here, we're just as good as anything. Delinquent Habits is as good as any hip hop out there. It doesn't matter if we're Latino, black, or white. Or not. Mm. It doesn't matter. We're just as good as any.
The thing is, too, is just because you sell more doesn't make you better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
skills are skills. If you really think about it, I can name a few broke MCs who have no money but more skill than most I know.
I think, you know what I mean? I think Immortal Technique has a line where he says, just because somebody sells more records than you doesn't mean they got more skill than you. It just means they got a better marketing plan or they have a bigger budget or something. Sometimes that is, you know, is the case at times.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, really.
Our movies like Blood In, Blood Out or America and Me did an impact in your music. I think about SoCal, your song SoCal.
Yeah. they're good movies, and they for sure like are movies that are known by our homeboys and on our culture, and they're like cult film classics, you know. But as far as my music, you know, my music's influenced by my lifestyle, what I've lived in my life. And I've never been in the MA, I've never been in a gang, I've never been anywhere. I have respect for all those guys and what they choose to do. But for me, I can't rap about something that I didn't do. You know, I've slept in a cell, I've had my head on a pillow in jail before, but I ain't never did no penitentiary time. I ain't never, you know, gone out and committed murders for my hood or something like that. So for me to rap about that would be dishonest. You know, and I kind of think that's where Kimo's at too on that stuff. And what we do rhyme about is what we will do. We let you know, hey, we're cool. But you want to fuck with us, we'll fuck with you. You know what I mean? That's it. That's how people should be, you know. Leave me alone, I leave you alone. We smile, you smile. But if you want to attack me, you're going to be fighting the tiger, you know. So
I talked about the song you made, SoCal, on your album, Come. You got the same music in Virgin Brothers, you know?
I did that one with Jack, and you know, it was like, we're just talking about, like, because it goes, this is SoCal, post-style, a little bit more wow. You know, it's basically talking about the streets, how it really is. And a lot of times when you're overseas or even, you know, on TV anywhere, people see Los Angeles and the first thing they show is Beverly Hills and Hollywood and all this. And yeah, that's parts of Los Angeles County, but that ain't LA.
Of course.
LA is families. LA is all different races. LA is gangbangers. LA is people that are struggling, and, and we have, that's real life too. It seems like the only real life they want to show is Paris Hilton walking around with their puppy, you know, or something like this, and the Kardashians or whatever the hell they're watching, and this is not real LA.
Or Melrose Place and all that shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, so all this stuff is what people want to dream that it's like if they come there. But let me tell you something, dude. LA ain't no joke, huh? It's not something like Bed of Roses. Nowhere is, but people think they're coming to LA or Southern California to just visit the beach, you know? There's cities you got to go through to get to the beach, and, you know, sometimes you don't make it out those cities.
It's the same for the Bay. It's very underrated.
Of course.
Like the Bay, Oaktown, Sacktown.
The Bay is a dangerous area.
Crazy.
Oakland is one of the craziest places in the United States at one time. Yeah. Really crazy.
Can you tell us about your featuring with Big Pun and Juju of Bitnuts back in the day?
That was pretty stalled.
The recording process and all of that? Like, what was that like?
The experience was cool.
Like,
yeah,
really,
yeah.
Unfortunately, we didn't have...
Pun was,
you know, what we did? We were there in New York. Then we had a show. So we were already in the East Coast. And that's when we got the opportunity to take that photo that we did with Esteban in Battery Park, where all the
hip hop
minority photo that Esteban took. Then we got in the, is that the same time?
Yeah.
I think so, right? And then we were able to get in the studio with
Juju.
With Juju from the Beatnuts to record Western Waste Part 2.
Yes, sir.
But wasn't, was it just Juju or did we get the,
just Juju and Psycho Les didn't come.
No. Oh, you didn't? So then that's right. It was only Juju, and we didn't get to meet Pun in the studio.
No.
Pun couldn't come into the studio, so we did the
it
song.
It was a pretty small studio.
Was it?
Tiny. I don't think there was room for Pun, too.
I thought it was
with
a product,
two
kind big, of a big
us
studio.
Us two big walkers with him in the same room, it wasn't going to work,
though. Yeah, well, he definitely wasn't. I don't think he was there live. But we got to meet him.
Chicago.
And we went out. We went out to a club. I got to meet him in person.
Yeah.
He was cool
Fat
people.
Joe.
Yeah,
Fat
yeah,
Joe
yeah.
was there too.
He was cool people we did get to meet, but we didn't get to work actually in the studio at the time. You know what I mean? But the experience was cool.
The song is a classic now. People love that.
Yes,
they didn't get much attention back then, but now people are like, hey, you heard that joint? I'm like, yeah, I heard that joint, you know?
Yeah. Got also Midnight Spin with a Sick Jacket of Psycho Rain. It was fun also. Like fun.
Yeah, this Midnight Spin is just how we all were at the time, huh, Kimo?
Oh, yeah.
It was like at midnight, that's when things started.
you know? It was nighttime, you know what I mean? That, especially at that time, you know what I mean? Getting out at night, a little bit after midnight, still got time to go get a little bit crazy, go get some tacos, and get some food afterwards. Just anything that happens after midnight usually isn't good, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, nothing good after midnight, nothing good comes.
On Freedom Bound, you got the last song. is a good song. Can you tell us about this song?
Remember that one?
It's a 2003.
Let me tell you something, babe.
That's the one.
Mira cómo baila.
Don't worry about nothing. Yeah, I remember. That's a bad one. I haven't done that song in 10 years, but I like it. We're going to do that, yeah.
That's a good party. Like, talking about finales.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's another
one. I mean, for us, do we just, like, honestly, I've always looked at my music as a way to escape from reality, where I was or what I'm doing. Plus, I have a lot of thoughts. And when you can write them down and write them in song form, people like to hear them. It's validation for someone when they're going through things, or if you had a hard, you know, childhood or even a hard life. Mm-hmm. You can take your music and write it down and go from there. And then with every song, you can focus on something different that you've learned and gone through, and if you're really smart about it, mm-hmm. you can actually make people open their eyes and see, like, hey, I went through that. Mm-hmm. I had that same thing. I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. I was upset. He was upset too. Life is easier when you realize that everyone has the same problems, bro. You go home and bang your head on the wall. You go home and bang it. We all do. Maybe not for real, but it's like you're like, man, stressed, got to pay this bill, got to go to this class, got to do... Everything is just so lined up. And if music makes it more or worse, it's not, to me, music that is something that is of a value to anyone but yourself. If you just put your angers down on music and people hear it and get more angry, all you're doing is creating a product that creates more despair and more helplessness. And what we do is we know, man, I know, man, I have all kind of shit in my head. But at the end of the day, I know that the people in the crowd help me as much as I help them. Yes. So when I make a song, it's whether it's the last song or whether it's Sing Your Favorite on the new album, you know, there's nobody in my life or in my book that should be forgotten. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where we're at. We're trying to make people happy, make everybody know that this is what we're here for.
Mm. Okay. Can you tell us about your album, Come On Mana?
Yeah. Common Man was, yeah. I was angry about the way that the American politicians and the bankers and all the rich guys ruined people's lives. I was angry to see 80-year-old women that have worked their whole life having nothing now, eating cat food and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do something constructive. I wrote a song explaining that, you know what, things are bad, but there's still people here that care. That's what the Common Man was saying. I spoke about family. I talked about the streets. It was just an array of thoughts. And I think the Common Man album was me as a common man, never being rich from music. Mm. I still understand where people come from. I still understand the normal, everyday struggle. You know, I don't worry about if I'm going to take a bath in Avion or Crystal water or whatever. I take a shower and I try to get out quick to save water money. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying, bro? So I think it's just like I was saying earlier, man. Everyone has the same life. It's just at a different level. I mean, if you're ultra rich, you have a different life for sure. But the people who live on the street level, the people who live on the level every day and go with everyone else, that's what I'm here for. That's what Common Man was for.
Okay. Kimo, can you tell us about your album Simple Plan and your label Dead Silence Records?
Yeah, so Simple Plan was 2003, right shortly after I went solo and decided to leave Delinquent Habits for that time. And I started, you know, recording an album. It was the first album that I entirely produced, all the production. I did all the production on it. And I recorded it. It was, you know, the first time I really got really deep into the creation, the full creation of a record. Mm-hmm. It was the first album where I wrote songs that were 100% in Spanish at times. And it was a really good and interesting experience. And also, like, solo projects are, you know, when you write as a solo artist, you're 100%, you know, free to just write as you will, because you're not necessarily having the same impact that you would on anyone else around you on a record. You know what I mean? So then you're able to sometimes go even deeper into your mind, into your heart, and express in expressions. It was a really fun record to do. I really enjoyed it. When I haven't listened to it in a really long time, but when we do some of the songs. We do, I think, at least one song from that album, which is La Receta. We enjoy performing that one here, actually, on tour. But I really liked it. I really like songs like Una Copa Más. I like Somos Trece, which I believe is probably my best Spanish-written record that I've ever done. I really like the lyrics on that one a lot. And it was a good learning experience in the studio on how to really make a record from start to finish. Okay. There was a song you asked about. Mm-hmm. Oh, Dead Silence record. Yeah. So I needed a vehicle. I needed a way to release the record. So I came up with the record label, you know, Dead Silence, to release my own album. And I don't know, I'm a helper. I like to help people. I like to see people that, you know, there's a lot of talent. This is what I've always noticed about hip-hop. There's a lot of really good stuff out there, but you really have to look for it. And what I wanted to do at that time was I felt that there was some good talent around me that I could help to get exposure to. Mm-hmm. And so I took on a couple of young artists at that time, Sicko Soldado, Jay Unico, and I was working with them to bring out their records as well. But what you come to find out, though, is it's really hard to help a lot of people sometimes when you're still really trying to help yourself. And so I was, you know, figuring that out. I'm still working and helping people, but in order to really help people the best you can, sometimes you have to get yourself to a better place as well. Mm-hmm. So you can really actually afford to help them and pay them the attention that they deserve. The Silence Records exist, though it's still something that I'm putting out. And there's new records coming out as well.
Okay. So you're back together now with, it could be round two. Can you tell us about this one, California, with Saint Dog again? And also Last Man Standing.
Well, both of those beats were produced by DJ Invincible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And California was a beat that we had for a very long time, and they kept working with it, and then we got the chance to write to it, and then when we wrote to it, it just came out like it did. California just was such a natural, easy flowing song. It wasn't easy to get put out because we had to go through a lot to clear the samples, but the song itself was just perfect beat, perfect everything. The video came together. Sendog loved it, and when we did it, it just kind of pictured perfectly through lyrics, through music, and through visuals what California is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's been really doing well, you know.
Yes. And Last Man Standing, this song.
So that's just that's a statement, man. We believe that, you know, there's not many real hip hoppers left. I think there's a lot of, you know, bullshit going on out there. There's some good stuff, but very few.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we're one of the last true, like, hip hop groups standing, you know. Of course, Cypress Hill, House of Pain, Psycho Realm, a lot of the cats that were down with us, you know. You still got some members of the Wu, you got Redman and these cats. But all these new guys with this gibberish and mumbling and all this other stuff, just, it's not something that we ever thought would happen to hip hop.
Yeah. It's that kind of song that you can take with you and you can play it when you need to stand tall and like survive through something. You know, I really I took it as like, and what I wrote, my approach that I took on that song was about kind of surviving like really hard times, or, you know, struggles in your life, or close calls.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, oftentimes in the writings, and I like for people to, I don't like to always tell exactly what it is that I'm writing about. I prefer that you take that and you figure that out for yourself. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when the writings take place, I know where I was coming from when I was writing it.
Yeah.
I know what I was going through in my life, and I know what I was putting on paper about that on Last Man Standing. And if it helps, if you hear that and it helps you to say, you know what, because of this song I can get through a tough situation or something, that's you know, that's a really good song that helps you get through some challenges in life. So Last Man Standing is that kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like you said, it's like we're tried and true in hip-hop, but also in life, you know what I mean? Like you probably had some struggles and some challenges in your life, and it's the same kind of situation that song speaks about.
Yeah. You got also the song Clone Me.
Clone Me?
Yeah. Can you tell us?
Ooh, shit. That's kind of a deep song, you know, to be quite honest. It's you know, the chorus is, it has its powerful, you know, meanings and statements about it, but it's just it's really talking about it was just talking about kind of realizing, you know, what the world is today, you know what I mean? It really speaks kind of like on government. It really speaks on, you know, liars, steals and cheat, you know, snakes and around us, you know, in our personal lives and in politics, you know what I mean? And, you know, it was just kind of talking about all the injustices that are out there, you know, and also realizing that in the very end, you know, you even got it so far that modern technology has it where there's like abominations where they want to actually take, you know, people and turn them into, you know, and clone folks as well, you know what I mean? But I also take it as like sometimes, you know, we're making music in such a way that, you know, we also want to be imitated and emulated, which is cool. That's kind of like a flattering thing where somebody, you know, says, hey, I want to make music like this group and I'm going to try to copy that style, especially in the very beginning, you know. So I don't know, it's one of those songs that you really have to kind of dissect it, but it has so many multi-layers of meanings that I find it to be one of the most important songs on the record, you know. I caught on fire, but I did not wait. Painted roses on the time I hate. It's kind of saying like we were kind of hot, like we were kind of blowing up and we were doing some really good things in the very beginning. We caught fire, but I did not wake. Like maybe we didn't always see the real picture. We didn't always see what was going on in the world around us because we were young. We were rhyming. We were just, you know, making hip hop, but we weren't always maybe looking at the deeper layers of the politics that were around us, you know. Caught on fire, but I did not wake. Painted roses, you know what I'm saying? It was kind of like that. Painting roses, but at the time, like, hey, times were ugly. We were trying to make good music, painting roses, trying to get people to still be positive and have a good time. The air was toxic. I'm trying to breathe. The rain, all that is, yes, these are some ugly times also that we live in right now, you know. And this is ways of really speaking the truth on that, that people do really have to realize, look around, and yeah, we can have a good time. We can party and everything, but don't be so blind to what's really happening around us. There's some serious things that are taking place in the world today, and we need to be aware of them. Yeah, if you're the type of person that wants to take action, then you should stand up and you should take some action for the better cause.
Yeah, I understand. It's part of also Zendistry, all that. What's your point of view?
What is what?
About Zendistry,
what
your music.
In this industry?
It's great.
You know, I've been outside of the corporate part of it, the mainstream and the corporate, you know, I don't deal with major labels anymore. I don't exactly know what that is like. All I do know is that we're independent and we make records ourselves, we put them out ourselves, we do the marketing promotion ourselves, and this allows us to have direct access to our fans, direct access to our, you know, when we release our content, our merchandise, and our cash flow. So as far as the corporate part of it, I don't have nothing to do with it, you know. I mean, if somebody wants to sign them or have it on a major label, then they should come knocking and, you know, make a proper offer. Other than that, I don't see no reason for us to hand it. We gotta what?
Kick semis on the head today, so we should check the mics and then we'll wait for it.
Yeah.
Or we can do E first.
We can check. I thought we were gonna check the mics anyway.
Yeah, we might. We should do it with the mic.
True. We can get the voices right.
Yeah.
Who's gonna be the time?
It's not till 7:30, and till 7:30. Mm-hmm. We won't be here till. Alright, cool. Sorry about that, brother. You got any more questions?
Yes, this is the last one.
Cool.
Yeah, as part of Mother Dog Magazine, we part of the map independent underground stuff, like Latino acts, like what do you think about these groups? Like,
I'm sorry.
Hey, what's up, brother?
Like,
we'll see you right now.
Yeah, groups like Darkroom Familia or Soldaino or Moody. Or these guys like that. What do you think about the underground in the Latino hip hop?
Shoot, I think the underground is what makes everything start to change and boil and give the good new creative stuff for sure. Underground's necessary for the guys up top to survive as well. That's where we started. you know?
Yeah, I think about a rapper like Woody. He was really underrated.
Oh, yeah.
Like who?
Woody.
Woody?
Yeah.
I heard him a couple times. Brad Mariachi used to play him.
I like to keep my ear to the underground for sure. Because you sometimes find some gems there. You find out that people are doing it right for sure. You get it. The thing about modern is there's a lot of technology and everybody gets to make records. And no disrespect, everybody should. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to make records, then you should give it a shot. But as far as like we're concerned, you get an opportunity to listen to a lot of stuff, and you can tell right away who's ready and who's not. Yeah. And you find something that's really good, you're like, damn, this guy's got his shit together. This dude's dope.
And some is half good.
Yeah.
Like the lyrics are super good, and the guy's dope, but he just needs a little like understanding of how many bars to
put in. Yeah, I just want to write like
50 like, bar versions. You know?
Or 15.
Yeah.
And you're like, damn, dude, why did you one more bar?
Please, you know, just add that
right there for me, man.
You know.
Or double that last line.
Otherwise, you got to change it. Yeah. Hmm. Cool.
Have your last message to say to young people starting to hip hop?
Sure. I think you should listen. If you don't like the music you're listening to when you're not on pills, when you're not fucked up, then you shouldn't like it when you are. I mean, check your music out. See what you're listening to. See the guys who are making it. See if they care about you. See if they care about the business or the music itself, not the business, I should say. And one thing you know about us, and one thing I always will say, is that we do care about our peoples who come and care about us. And we always bring 110%.
Okay, well, thanks. Hip Hop Corner.
Yeah.
Auto Magazine.